This is Lewis Rogers, and you're listening to The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. Capital Square specializes in tax-advantaged real estate investments locally and nationally. I'm Lewis Rogers, founder and CEO of Capital Square. The last 2 weeks, I had the pleasure of interviewing Willie Walker, the CEO of Walker & Dunlop. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Whitson Huffman, a senior executive at Capital Square. Whit, welcome to The Real Estate Show. What's your title?
Thank you, Lewis. Thanks for having me. I am the Chief Strategy and Investment Officer at Capital Square.
That's a big title. What does that mean? What does that entail?
I establish the investment strategies for Capital Square. And so I help us craft strategies that allow us to obtain the investment objectives for our varying strategies, which include a REIT, our Delaware statutory trust business, and our opportunity zone development business.
With all that's happened over the past 15 months with COVID pandemic and challenges to the economy, what is your preferred real estate investment today?
So our preferred real estate investment strategy is multifamily. We like multifamily for a couple of reasons. One, it's proven to be exceptionally resilient, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. Our portfolio of apartments has proven to be exceptionally strong and resilient. Rent collections, meaning of the expected rent we are looking to obtain, we've been achieving anywhere from 98 to 99% on a monthly basis. I think anybody would say that being 98 or 99% during a global health crisis is pretty darn good. And so having that data has really allowed us to continue to lean into our multifamily strategies, and not just for our stabilized business, but also on the development side. And obviously, you're local to Richmond, Lewis. You've seen all the multifamily development activity that we've been doing in the market.
It's interesting. You have two titles, your Chief Strategy Officer and Chief Investment Officer. What does it mean to be Chief Investment Officer?
So I oversee the acquisitions for Capital Square. We have 7 folks that work on our acquisitions team, and I run the group. I also chair our firm's investment committee. So when we're looking at a new acquisition, we'll have a few team members who are working on the underwriting. So I'll oversee that underwriting of the property, the analysis, the assumptions we're using. So what rent are we assuming? What expenses we are assuming? And we work through all of those things to understand exactly how we think the property will perform. And then I look at the broader market and the spectrum of investment returns, not just in real estate, but on equities or stocks, bonds, whatever it might be, to understand if we think it's a good investment on a relative basis. So when we look at multifamily communities, obviously what we're looking for is, can we deliver stable returns to our investors? And are those returns commensurate for the level of risk that we're taking?
You were once with a large institution that's now on the New York Stock Exchange. How similar is Capital Square when it comes to being institutional in its investments?
So I would say, you know, we're nearly identical in terms of our approach. Capital Square takes a very institutional approach to their acquisitions. Exceptionally detailed underwriting, very detailed market analysis. Where divergent from my last company was, the last place I worked was solely focused on the Washington, D.C. MSA, which was a really great strategy at that time. But I think Capital Square has been the beneficiary of being a little bit more broad in its view and the landscape in which it's investing. And fortunately for us, that's been largely in the Mid-Atlantic and Southeast. And those have been some of the more high growth markets during the last cycle. So really thinking about post-2007, 2008, the great financial crisis, those markets have performed exceptionally well. And so by having a broad institutional view, Capital Square has been able to capitalize on some trends in the broader country in terms of people moving to the Southeast.
Tell us what Capital Square has done during your watch.
During our watch, we've acquired about $2.7 billion of assets, and mostly, I'd say 75% of them have been in multifamily. This year alone, through the first half, we've done about $565 million of real estate acquisitions. We're best known for our Delaware Statutory Trust business, or DST, and that's a program for 1031 exchange investors seeking tax deferral and capital appreciation. And so with that, we've actually been able to achieve the second rating, or being the second largest 1031 sponsor in the country. Our company is unique in that we encourage diversification. It helps investors reduce risk from concentrated investment. It sounds corny, but it's true. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. If you drop the basket, they'll all break. I think I've heard Lewis say that about 1,000 times. I could recite it in my sleep. Right now, a great example, we've got 5 DST offerings available right now, give or take. And so that makes it easy to diversify into a Class A community, so brand new trophy. a Class B community, so a community that's maybe built in the 80s or 90s and needs a little work, but you'll get increased additional revenue because of that, or a medical office or industrial property.
Excellent, excellent. I understand most exchangers need debt under Section 1031. In our first session and second session, we talked about 1031 exchanges. And under Section 1031, if you have debt on your relinquished property, you must have equal or greater debt on your replacement property. And so Capital Square typically has properties that are leveraged. Some investors don't need debt, whereas they say to me, I don't want no stinking debt. I worked all my life to get out of debt. And so Capital Square also has all cash, no debt DSTs for exchangers who do not need or want debt. What about other things? Development, opportunity zones, what else is happening?
So we have a growing development business, which has been focused on opportunity zones. And opportunity zones provide tax deferral and exclusion. We currently have 5 active opportunity zone developments that are under construction. 4 of them are in Richmond, Virginia. We have 1 in Charleston, North Carolina, South Carolina. And then we just launched another development, a high-rise multifamily community that is to be built in Raleigh, North Carolina. And then our most recent line of business is going to be our apartment REIT. And that's for investors that are looking to make a long-term investment in housing. So that REIT is buying Class A and Class B apartment communities in the Southeast in Texas. Our first REIT acquisition was a local one in May, Sapphire at Centerpoint. And that was a Class A 192-unit community in a suburb of Richmond, Virginia, obviously our backyard. And the property was almost 100% occupied as of June 30th, 2021. And the rents are moving at a really good clip. And so that really is emblematic of our investment strategy of buying stable cash flowing assets that provide consistent dividends or returns for investors.
I see a pattern here of buying brand newly constructed properties that are leased up from the developers. Can you tell us a little bit about that strategy?
We know, because we're developers ourselves, if you're building a 200-unit apartment building or a 300-unit apartment building, it's really hard to lease every unit at the right rental rate. So finding where the exact right number is really challenging. You're focused on getting the building full. And so when we buy a deal directly from a developer, we think we have the opportunity to then take that rent roll and optimize the income by getting rents to where they should be, or true top of market rents. And it's a very niche strategy, but it's one that's worked exceptionally well for us. It's one that we think benefits our investors in a very unique way and leverages our deep development expertise in understanding how properties lease up, where rents really should be, and how we can optimize returns.
And what have you seen on the first turn of new leases?
It's been pretty staggering. So on average, across our Class A lease-up strategy, which is what we're talking about, average rent growth has been, depending on the month, anywhere from 10 to 15% on a year-over-year basis. So exceptionally strong growth.
10 to 15%.
Mm-hmm.
Say that one more time.
10 to 15% rent growth year-over-year for our lease-up strategy.
That is phenomenal. Do I recall that Richmond was once the top market for was it renewals or was it for rent increases?
Yeah, during the COVID-19 pandemic, believe it or not, Richmond actually was one of the top markets for rent growth. You'd expect rent contraction or decline, but Richmond performed really well during the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's really a good example is our brand new deals in Richmond are some of the higher performers in our portfolio.
I'm proud to say that Capital Square has proven its ability to buy, finance, manage, and sell properties. Tell us a little bit about the finance side.
We leverage our deep experience on the acquisitions team at the executive team to finance these communities exceptionally well. So we've negotiated really favorable debt for our leverage offering. We've had a bunch of loans in the 2% range, 2.5 to 2.75, which is just incredible. We use Walker and Dunlop for most of our financing, and they've brought us to some of the largest lenders in the country: Fannie Mae, New York Life, Bank of America, Prudential, PNC, and JP Morgan are a few of our regular lenders.
Is it true that you're responsible for bringing the life company lending to Capital Square?
We were the first to do it in our space in the DST business, and we're very pleased to work with such institutional capital partners. We think it's reflective of our institutional acquisitions. Obviously, it's a little bit of a rubber stamp of approval when you get some of the biggest names in finance lending on your transactions.
Absolutely. When would you use Fannie Mae versus a life insurance company? for a lender on a $50, $100 million large apartment community?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So the mission of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, for that matter, is to help preserve and promote naturally occurring affordable housing. They call it mission critical business. And so our deals that are built in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s tend to have very affordable rent for their area. And so that makes them a very good fit for Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. The brand new shiny apartment buildings that are just coming out of lease up are really the darlings for the life companies and the banks. They love that shiny new product. And so when we look at an acquisition, we always target and canvas the market in its totality, but generally that's where the dust settles.
The proof is in the pudding. Each property has an investment thesis and a holding period. How is Capital Square done when it comes to going full cycle and selling properties?
We've done well. So we've sold 12 properties out of our programs, and they've resulted in an average of about 162% total return to investors. So for every dollar invested, $1.62 came out. And I'd say that's pretty strong return profile for assets that were designed to provide safe, stable returns.
That is true. That's the average. I'm looking at a press release for a property that sold recently that had a 222% total return and a 23% annualized return. But that's just one of the 12 properties. Good results. Well done on the dispositions. What if we could, let's shift gears into multifamily. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about why multifamily. We had the COVID pandemic when it hit about 15 months ago. I recall just as if it were yesterday that we sort of had an aha moment together. All of us had the light bulb came on. We were facing an uncharted crisis and we were concerned. We asked our asset managers on the team about our multifamily portfolio at the time was what, about 7,000 units?
That sounds right.
And all in the Southeast in Texas. And today, about how many units is that?
We're sitting at just about 9,000 units. So obviously that's a really big growth since the COVID-19 pandemic.
So we say to our asset managers, not knowing what's happening, not knowing if the world's coming to an end, how is occupancy? How are collections in light of the pandemic? And what did they say to us? What was the answer?
That they're performing really well, that they're exceptionally strong. And it was about 99% on collections. And that kind of kept going. Every month we would get a report, collections on an asset by asset basis. And it was really surprising. We were facing an unprecedented crisis, a very deep pandemic that prohibited and precluded people from going to work, and from collecting a paycheck in many cases. And so we naturally, like everybody else, were wondering, were people going to pay their rent? And what we learned was that the properties performed really well because housing is the most essential real estate asset class. You might give up going to the grocery store, right? You might give up going to the restaurant. You might even give up your car payment, but you're not going to give up the roof over your head if you absolutely don't have to. And I think the strong rent collections is very emblematic of that.
That's a very good point. So when we experienced such strong performance and we said, gee, we've had a stress test that we can't even have imagined. I couldn't have told you what a pandemic was 3 years ago. I'd never even heard the word pandemic. I thought it was something in the zoo, maybe in your Washington, D.C. zoo. But after going through all that, what was the outcome at Capital Square? What did you do differently thereafter?
Well, we doubled down and we really focused on multifamily. We expanded our strategy to start working on those lease up deals for properties that were caught going through lease up in the middle of the pandemic. And so we obviously grew our portfolio by 28% over the last 15 months. And so we leaned in exceptionally strong. And as a result of this, what you refer to as a mega stress test, which is a term I like really well, I think we've learned a lot about what assets and what markets perform the best. And so we doubled down on those strategies that worked the best. And we think our portfolio is better because of it.
And where did Capital Square buy during the pandemic and after?
Yeah, so we bought in Richmond, Virginia, our hometown, which was fantastic. But we also bought in some lesser known secondary and tertiary markets, some suburbs of Atlanta, Augusta, Georgia, Greensboro, North Carolina, places that were the benefit of in-migration from more urban primary markets, especially in the Northeast. Think of folks fleeing New York City and moving to North Carolina. We were trying to purchase and acquire multifamily communities that were capitalizing on that migration from those cities.
Well, let's continue in your role as Chief Strategy Officer, Chief Investment Officer. If you would help explain the apartment story. Why apartments?
Well, I think it's important to take one step back and think about how we approach what I would kind of think about as thematic investing. And we engaged Dr. Peter Linneman to help us understand the spectrum of multifamily investing. And for those of you on listeners who don't know, Dr. Linneman is a highly respected economist from Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. You know, he's literally wrote the book on real estate finance and investments. And so he prepared a white paper for us. It was called The Golden Age of Multifamily Investing, and it emphasized a few key attributes. The first being that the multifamily sector has, broadly speaking, outperformed other commercial real estate sectors, and it's had higher returns, lower volatility, lower vacancy, and it really benefits from favorable debt from the agencies, most notably Fannie Mae. And so when we gathered that information, we thought, well, outside of our DST business, how do we help folks capitalize on that trend or that sector? And so naturally, we lean towards the REIT to provide diversified, stable cash flowing investments. And so that's how we landed there. And as we continue to peel the layer back on the onion, you know, we learned some different things that we thought really resonated. The first being housing, generally speaking, is one of the largest asset classes in the world. And 33% of consumer spending is on housing. So when you think about the global economy, but also the national economy, housing is a critically important part of it. And so then we looked at, well, what's going on inside of housing? And we saw this great migration out of the Northeast, Midwest, and even some West Coast cities to the Southeast. We thought the REIT was a great opportunity to give investors the chance to invest on the leading edge of that migration.
In past sessions, you've talked about how housing is a necessity versus a discretionary. You don't have to go to Starbucks to buy coffee. If 33% of your income goes to housing, maybe 0.25% to coffee, I'll take the 33% every time.
Absolutely. There really is no more essential real estate asset than housing. Everyone needs a roof to sleep over your head. And when you take a step back and think about it, and you think about some of the most important fundamental components of your life, housing is at the top of that list.
What happened during COVID?
So during COVID, rent collections were exceptionally strong, and it was demonstrated the stability, necessity, and desirability. There was the acceleration of that migratory trend, right? People leaving primary gateway cities like New York and San Francisco and moving to smaller cities like at Richmond or in Augusta, Georgia, or even in Atlanta or Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. And then as the pandemic continued to wear on, those dense gateway cities started to lose rent, and they started to pick up occupancy. So obviously those cities became a really tough place for investment. And what ended up happening was, especially if you were on the leading edge of getting in on those investments, the markets really heated up in the Southeast and Texas, especially those cities that were the major beneficiaries of in-migration from those gateway markets.
Work from home really changed everything. If you're working from home, why pay $4,000 for a tiny apartment in Tribeca, New York? Mm-hmm. You could have half a house in Richmond, Virginia for $1,200 or $1,500.
It's a really meaningful step when you think about the average rent in a gateway city or a primary market's about $1,600 a month. In a secondary market, it's about $1,200. And in a tertiary market, it's about $950, $960. Those are really meaningful savings. And when you think about mobility, at no point ever in human history has there been greater mobility than there is today. Microsoft Teams, Zoom, the ability to meet with people virtually has really unleashed the ability for folks to have a home base in a major city. And maybe you need to check in every quarter or every month, but you can put down roots and live exactly where you want to. And it's no shock that people prefer to live in places where there's a low cost of living and a high quality of life.
Let's downshift one more time to job growth. Tell us about what's happening with jobs in the Southeast and Texas.
As I just mentioned, people want to live in the Southeast and Texas, and because of that, employers want to locate there, right? So low taxes, low cost of living, warm weather, business-friendly governments, and limited opposition to new entitlement and zoning has really driven companies to relocate or open satellite offices across the Southeast and Texas. I think the biggest headline real estate related during the pandemic, or at least one of them, was all of the finance companies opening offices in Miami and moving a meaningful portion of their workforce from New York to Florida. I think that is a really great example of folks and companies recognizing that Florida has low taxes, a relatively low cost of living, especially in relation to New York, a great climate, business-friendly government, and then plenty of housing available.
Texas is off the chart with corporate moves.
Absolutely. Texas couldn't be hotter, and especially those markets in and around Dallas-Fort Worth and Austin, Texas. And a lot of people are surprised when they look at and understand the amount of technology jobs that are in Austin, Texas. You know, those jobs aren't just in San Francisco. They're not just in California. Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, Austin, Texas, Alexandria, and Arlington, Virginia. Those are all big tech employment hubs.
This is Lewis Rogers, and you're listening to The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. Capital Square specializes in tax advantage real estate investments locally and nationally. Join us next week for another insightful program on tax advantaged real estate investing. Living in the sweet Virginia breeze.
Sweet Virginia breeze. The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors, LLC, is broadcast as an information service and includes opinions as to buying, selling, and holding various investments. However, the host, Lewis Rogers, is not licensed to give any financial, tax, or other investment advice or recommendations. Accordingly, any data and information discussed is provided for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended to be an offer or solicitation to invest in any particular investment. You should never make an investment decision based solely off the information discussed on this broadcast. If you are seeking investment, tax, or legal advice, you should consult with a registered investment advisor, financial, tax, or legal professional of your choosing. Opinions and views expressed on this broadcast are opinions and views based on research gathered through what we believe to be reputable sources. Although we believe these sources to be accurate and reliable, in no way do we represent or guarantee the accuracy thereof, nor the accuracy of the statements made on this broadcast. Listeners should independently verify all claims on this broadcast and conduct their own due diligence before investing in any securities or investments, including any mentioned on this broadcast. Investing in securities is highly speculative and carries a high degree of risk.